Good afternoon. House Judiciary is in session. And in attendance is Representative Gruenberg, Representative Coghill, Self-Representative Ramirez, Representative Samuels, and Representative Holmes are here. And we are honored to have the esteemed Representative Kevin Meyer here and his trusty aide, Mike Pulowski, to talk to us about House Bill 19 today. And gentlemen, and do we have a CS? Would somebody move to adopt the CS, please? Samuels? We do not? Oh, okay. This is the State Affairs version? Okay. And we have the CS for House Bill number 19 in front of us, the M as in Mary version is before us. And Representative Myers, Mr. Pulowski, nice to see you, gentlemen.
It's really good to be here, Mr. Chairman. Thank you for hearing our bill today. This is before you is House Bill 19. I introduced House Bill 19 after working with a constituent over the summer, and she actually had been working with someone else who was basically trying to get their life together after having several DUIs. We all know that drunk driving is a serious threat to our society and to our safety. And every year here in Alaska, we over 5,000 Alaskans are arrested for driving under the influence. And of those, at least 800 are arrested for driving under the influence on a suspended or revoked license. So in order to understand House Bill 19, we need to look at how we deal with these thousands of Alaskans who are caught driving under the influence each year. And like the commercial says, in Alaska, if you drive drunk, you're going to go to jail, you're going to get fined, and you're going to have your driver's license revoked. And this bill does not change those penalties whatsoever. What House Bill 19 does is it changes our limited license statutes for someone convicted of a DUI. Currently, there are two parts to revocation. First offense typically is 90 days, and the first 30 days, you know, you got to take a cab, you got to take the bus or however to get to and from work. The next 60 days, you're allowed to have a limited license, which means you can drive from home to work and back. This bill is going to create a new limited license for people convicted of driving under the influence. And we're going to focus more on how they drive, not necessarily where, because the how is what got them in trouble to start with. Recognizing that driving under the influence is a problem of how and not where, House Bill 19 requires installation of ignition interlock device on the vehicle the person will be driving and limits them to only the vehicle with the ignition interlock device. An ignition interlock device is essentially a breathalyzer that is installed on a vehicle. The person blows into the device, and if the device detects a set amount of alcohol, then the car does not start. If you can't blow, you can't go, Mr. Chairman. Other states, including Alaska, have used ignition interlocks primarily for repeat offenders or as something imposed by the courts. The program has been successful thus far. House Bill 19 is different, though, in the sense that it works through DMV rather than the court system to grant privilege to drive during the period of revocation, only when an ignition interlock device. House Bill 19 will not stop people from driving drunk. What it will do is stop them from driving drunk while the ignition interlock device is in their vehicle. Remember, if you can't blow, you can't go, and if you can't go, then hopefully our streets will be safe or safer from repeat DUIs. Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and I'd be happy to answer any questions you may have on this.
Thank you, Rep. Meyer. Did you say that it'd be limited to only their own vehicle? Was that a point that you made?
I think whatever vehicle they're going to drive. Mr. Chairman, with your permission, I'd like to ask Mr. Pulowski.
Through the chair, Representative Ramirez. For the record, this is Mike Pulowski, aide to Representative Meyer. The proof is on page 2, lines 14 through 15, and it's on every vehicle the person operates. DMV should be online. They can explain some of the interpretation they would take of that. We've had casual conversations about someone who's, say, in a work environment, who has to drive for work. There could be a situation where the work and them, the employee, put the ignition interlock device on the car that they're driving for employment. And that could be a situation as well. But the key is the vehicle they operate.
So if I'm in the trades and I drive my own vehicle to work, it has an ignition interlock in it. But once I get to work, I jump in a company rig or the company forklift or a heavy piece of equipment, am I then in violation of this? Does the restriction apply to, you know, are you restricted to only on every vehicle the person operates? So that would mean I couldn't drive a forklift then, presumably, or a dump truck or a company rig if it wasn't also equipped with a...
Mr. Chairman, if I may, I think we'll hear from DMV that on the license now there'll be a little number, like a number 5, that'll have a restriction that means that you can only drive a vehicle if it's equipped with the breathalyzer. I'm not sure, like on a forklift, if they require a driver's license. If they don't, then the person could probably still drive the forklift.
Okay. We've been joined by Representative Lynn and Vice Chair Dahlstrom. Representative Samuels?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. To follow up on that same question, and maybe DMV can answer and maybe Annie Carpenter can answer, the penalties for driving right now, if you get a DWI and the next day you hop in your car, what's the penalty? You've already lost your license.
Through the chair, Representative Samuels, the penalty if you're caught driving with a revoked or suspended license is the penalty for driving with a revoked or suspended license. So on day one, if I'm out driving with a revoked license, I'm subject to that penalty. You'll actually see that in the bill because we draw a nexus in Section 2 with the basically affidavit that the person signs when they get their limited license, that they understand the terms of the limited license being only the vehicle you operate. So Section 3 is your driving with a revoked or suspended license. We link this back to that statute. You'll see it's a misdemeanor. There's a...
You haven't changed it.
We have not changed it. The only thing we've also added is in page 2, lines 24 and 25, is say if they're driving with a limited ignition interlock license and they violate it, we're saying that's kind of your one shot to keep your license back. If you violate it, you can't get it again.
I can continue. Thank you. Because in some ways, you're if somebody gets a DWI for the first time and it's not a repeat offender, the first 30 days is a punishment, and you're kind of letting them off the hook by letting them drive anywhere right now. I mean, because if I had to find a ride to work and I couldn't ride my bicycle or do all of these things, it's going to be a pretty harsh reminder to me. It is the part of the punishment is not being able to drive the car. And now you kind of say, well, we're going to take that punishment away. I understand what you're trying to do, but I would think that if you'd still choose to break the law, if I borrow my friend's car so that I can go out and have a couple of beers, I would think the penalties for that are actually for any reason. If I borrow my friend's car, I'm not driving the interlock car. Society has let you drive anywhere you want to. If I borrow a car and I flaunt that law, the penalty should be huge. We're already kind of granting you this freedom that we're not going to grant other people. So we're going to grant this freedom that we should really whack you if you choose to borrow your friend's car. I don't care if it's to run to the store or you want to avoid the interlock device or whatever it is, you borrow your wife's car, whatever it is, because we're letting you off the hook on the short end of the stake here. We're letting you off the hook for that first 30 days.
Mr. Chairman, I think if Senator Samuels wants to make an amendment to make that more of a deterrent so that people, you know, don't look at this as a privilege so that they can now drive, albeit they can only drive with the breathalyzer. And I think in some ways, that's going to be punishment in itself, because that's going to be quite embarrassing to have to blow into this thing each time you start your car, and you're going to pay the expense. So there is some money involved. The first 30 days, as you mentioned, at least in Anchorage, I'm not sure how big a punishment that really is, because you basically just take the bus for 30 days or carpool or ride your bike or like you said, whatever. But now you're going to have to blow into it to a tube.
Representative Samuels. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. For the first 90 days, though, the whole nut for a first-time offender, it's 30 days without a car and then 60 days only driving to work, which means you don't get to go skiing, you don't get to go to dinner, you don't get to see your
mom,
your girlfriend, your boyfriend. Don't get to go do any of these things. And now we're giving all that back, all those freedoms that you lose solely because you don't have the transportation. I mean, you're 15 years old again when you get the DWI, depending on people to give you rides and all these things. You're giving that back. And the good part is the interlock device, I guess I'll follow up the question, is the penalty going to be longer then? Because we're giving you those freedoms back. The ability to go use the car, and I get to go skiing this weekend, even though yesterday I had the DWI, while before it had been 90 days. I'm missing a huge segment of time that I can't do anything. So is the time going to increase at all? Or,
Mr. Chairman?
Yes.
Representative Samuels? I don't disagree with your argument. I think that's a very good argument. I think the thing to keep in mind, at least the numbers we've seen and that they're documented by public safety, is that almost 20% of the people who were originally picked up for DUI and then was given a limited license are now being picked up again for DWI using a limited license. So they're not just driving to and from work. That's part of the problem. They're stopping to get groceries. They're stopping to see their mother because she's just a couple blocks off. And what we're saying is, okay, you know, you guys are going to take advantage of this limited license. Let's at least make sure you're sober. And that's where the breathalyzer comes into play.
And through the chair, Representative Samuels, if I might offer as well, the current penalty for driving with a revoked or suspended license on page 3, lines 27-28, includes the forfeiture of the vehicle. I'd argue if I borrow your car and get pulled over borrowing your car and that car is then forfeited to the state, you and my relationship could suffer dramatically. In that
could is not.
It's on the car, I guess.
Yeah, true.
Chairman, if I may.
Sure.
There's a may order, so.
Right.
And I understand that, too, because I wouldn't know if you have a revoked license if you say, Ralph, can I borrow your car to go to the store and pick up groceries, and I'd give you the keys, and away we'd go. And I'd hate to make that a shell, but anyway, I'm through for now.
Other questions? I have some questions. Other questions? Representative Holmes?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm looking down at the bottom of page 3 and the top of page 4, which are somewhat similar provisions, but in many different sections, different statutes, that say that in addition to penalties provided in A or N or A or C, this court may place a person convicted under those subsections on probation for a period of not more than 5 years following term of imprisonment. Does that give the court discretion to order more probation than they had the right to in the past? Less probation? Does it stay the same?
Through the chair, Representative Holmes, I actually have to defer to Representative Gruenberg on this. This was an amendment added in State Affairs. As we understand it, talking to the court system, what it actually would do is limit the length of probation. So, say your third DUI, mm-hmm. you're up to a 10-year probation. Well, this would limit it to 5, which, and I believe Representative Gruenberg's been working on something related to that issue over the past couple of days since State Affairs Committee.
Mm-hmm. I'll follow up with Representative Gruenberg afterwards.
Representative Meyer.
Yes.
Sure. Thank you. We'll wait until Representative Gruenberg's ready to take that up. If I could take you back a week to last Monday when we had lunch in Ketchikan. Pi and Sitka, with many of our members. And Ian Ketchikan. Ketchikan did not look anything like where Representative Coghill and I make our home. Not even remotely so.
Few places do.
Kind of you to say, Representative Grunberg, because I'll take that as a half-full comment. I think you might be out of order, Representative Samuels.
Always.
So mean. So my question is the 40 below test for, let's say the northern region of DOT, let's say, because that covers a fair amount of people. I know that it's been tested and that we've got the guarantee, but sometimes, practical application is different than a test that's designed to pass the piece of equipment. And can you speak to that a little bit, please?
Mr. Chairman, after we enjoyed that piece of pie together, I asked Mr. Pulaski to do some research, and I think he has some research that will show that it has been tested at 40 below, and I think it's verified by the Department of Public Safety, and we may hear from them. I don't know if they're online or not.
The commissioner is in the back of the room.
Oh, very good, very good. And they will verify as such that it has been tested up to minus 40 and works.
Go ahead,
if I might, and through the chair, Representative Rams, just in clarification, it's actually corrections, and they should be here as well.
Okay.
Corrections sanctions it, public safety, it's,
And I don't mean to be a stickler or to point out other charming attributes of my community, Representative Grunberg, but what about...
I was just kidding, really, because it's a great place.
You weren't.
Ketchikan's a beautiful place.
What about 50 below? I mean, it was last year... We have equipment that functions perfectly at minus 20, minus 30. It's okay at minus 40. Minus 50 is an entirely different climate than minus 40. And you might consider this in your capacity as the climate assessment person, that Fairbanks and the northern region are difficult places to live. And can you just talk just in general about... what its application is, how the application is meant to satisfy the whole northern region, and resetting it in more remote communities than, let's say, Fairbanks, where there is an urban population, an urban center that can reset the ignition interlock if it doesn't work. If you take it in to warm it up, which is what you're supposed to be able to do, is disconnect it. But I've gone home many times in Fairbanks where my garage door opener wouldn't operate, even though my car was warm, but it needed to, I've stood in with my garage door opener under my arm, to try and warm up the batteries so that I can get enough juice to open it up. And on the coldest nights, even with the cab of the vehicle is reasonably warm. And we do get into a life safety. We cross over into some life safety issues, and also the fact that we're granting these people the right to drive under these narrow conditions. And now any defect in the equipment, especially in a more rural application than Fairbanks, and you got yourself right in a movie scenario, where they're like, oh, well, yeah, the garage don't open till Monday. Can you speak to that?
Mr. Chairman, and I know, again, Mr. Pulaski's done more research on this than I have, but... there's two vendors that sell these devices, which I'm not associated with either one, just for the record. And I know they have sold, and they do use them in Fairbanks and in the northern region. And I think at least one, if maybe not both, will be testifying to the to the use in the northern areas. That's it.
Okay. What to follow up on that point, because I am concerned about people that live where I live as.
You should.
As I should be, right.
Yeah.
What kind of a this would take effect on January 1 of 08, which would allow to gear into it. Is this a permanent application? How are we going to allow for modifications to this ignition interlock if it doesn't work the way that it's supposed to in all regions of the state, what's our backup plan? I mean, it's certainly down here in Southeast, we don't have the same temperature problems that we have in the northern region. But the northern region encompasses, I don't know, maybe 20% of the state, you know, Fairbanks plus all the other communities that are further north. What's the plan if it works really well everywhere else and only kind of well there? Representative Groomberg?
I'm sorry, I have been fine-tuning something that I was remiss in not doing earlier, but I'm ready now. The original bill, Mr. Chair, ignition interlock bill, was introduced by me it passed in 1989 and received a lot of legislative attention at the time. The final stop was on the Senate floor, where the father of the current House Rules Chair was sitting in the back row. And he had exactly the same concern as you, because he represented the same part of the state, basically.
I feel better as the chairman. I'm keeping good company. Yes, Representative Groomberg.
And he insisted that we take into consideration the problem you've mentioned. Being from balmy Anchorage, I hadn't considered that possibility. And we put language in Title 33 that states that the Department of Corrections must consider the climatic conditions in approving regulations for any particular type of device. So these devices are by law supposed to be climatic specific. In other words, they are not supposed to be certified in the colder regions unless they can absolutely safely operate there. And I can get you the exact language if our able assistant could get me Title 33. I'll find the statute. I think it's 3307 somewhere. I showed it to Representative Coghill when we were in State Affairs. It's not referenced in the bill there.
Oh, it's 33.05. It says operate reliably over a range of automobile environments, otherwise known as automobile manufacturing standards for the geographic area for which the device is certified.
I believe that's it. Thank you. As usual, you're beyond me here.
But it still invites the 50 below question. It invites the most extreme conditions. When your life safety is most greatly at risk, you know, I remember coming back from Salcha and hitting a moose out in front of, by Eielson Air Force Base, and I was not concerned for my, I was concerned for the moose, but for my, you know, not for my car, but I thought, oh gosh, I could be stranded out here 35 miles out of town. It was 35 below zero, and I was worried for that, you know, for that climactic condition. Representative Holmes?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Let me know if I'm reading this correctly. I'm looking at page 2, line 3, has section 2 here, which adds a new subsection F. But if you flip back to the statute, it's amending, which we have in the back of our packet. There's also a subsection D, which is, I believe, the current provisions for a temporary license or a limited license. And if I'm correct, that subsection remains valid. So if you have a place, say, lovely home of our chairman, or you have, for instance, somewhere in rural Alaska where maybe these ignition interlocks are not readily available, you would still have the option of using the existing provisions to grant a limited license. Is that correct?
Through the chair, Representative Holmes. No, because Section 6 repeals D and E. And that was after discussions with the DMV about consistency across the board. One part of Alaska really shouldn't be treated different than another part of Alaska, and uniform treatment of everyone. In terms of the point and the problem you get to at 50 below, it's a problem for all mechanical things. Whether your car actually works itself. I know I drive an old Land Cruiser, and I wouldn't drive it in 50 below because I would guarantee myself that I get left wherever I end up with it. The best I think we can do for that is wait for testimony from the vendors in the Department of Corrections, because after the work Representative Gruenberg has done, Fairbanks has actually been one of the communities that has used the ignition interlock device more than just about anywhere else in Alaska. And I think there's quite a bit of experience both in Fairbanks and in places like Fort Yukon.
Representative Holmes?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Just to put on the record, as other people are testifying, I would be interested in the effect in some of the rural areas of Alaska and whether or not they're going to have access to this technology.
Representative Samuels?
Thank you. I just wanted to clarify. If you chose not to spend your money on the interlock, you would then revert to the old system where no license for 30 days, or what happens to in
through the chair
your
representative
choice as the defendant, or
through the chair, Representative Samuels, you would have no recourse to get a limited license unless you're willing to put an ignition interlock device in your car.
You're changing it completely, so you either pay and get this, or you're out of luck for the entire 90 days.
Okay.
I was just going to say that's part of the repealer, and been taught by this committee to always look at the repealer first and then work into the bill. So, there's a couple process questions, and we can wait till Mr. Bannett gets on. But you have the court or the administration able to do the revocation, and there have been notification issues. So. Maybe because Fairbanks does this most, they can help us on certainly how the court and the DMV communicate. So that'll be one. And then I'd be kind of interested to find out what the timeline is on this, because I've sat through enough arraignments to know that usually a guy comes in or a gal comes in maybe already in debt or worse. And then we're going to put a requirement in a situation like this. So you all of a sudden have a cadre of folks that you're going to have to either hold in jail or do something else with. And so just what that time between the ability to afford, and I know that there's probably organizations or places where they could probably get some support for that. But I'd like to know what the court or the administration may see as a process issue for getting them to that timeline.
Sure. Through the chair, Representative Coghill, there are people that will be testifying that I think can help a lot with that question, and it is an important one. One of the things we had looked at in adding the courts back in state affairs was the court's ability to deduct the cost of the ignition interlock device from the fines. It's one of the few times a court can actually do that. We also heard testimony from the vendors that often they waive the installation fees from low-income people. They'll hand out free passes to the public defender's office. And when you really add up the cost per month of maintaining the device in the neighborhood of $125, you're talking about the cost per day of about a beer, $5 a day. And so in looking at the benefit to people, the vendor was just sharing a story with me this morning about a gentleman who is keeping the ignition interlock device on his car long past the time that his probation ended, because it's keeping him from spending that money on alcohol, and it's not that cheap to maintain. When you compare it to your second DUI or third DUI, it's a pretty easy decision to make.
Rep. Dahlstrom?
Thank you. Just a comment about something you just said. You know, I guess if people choose to spend their money on beer, through the chair, I don't, no matter what, no matter what their other priorities are, I personally just can't feel good about handing them a voucher to go get a free system when they have broken the law. They've made a conscious choice. So that's just a comment on that. A question about the ignition interlock. Will it fit in every car that is made? And then is it possible for someone to kind of jerry-rig that so that it doesn't do what it's supposed to do? How foolproof is it?
Through the chair, Representative Dahlstrom, I'd defer to the actual vendors who have experience installing these devices. But I would point you to AS 1176-140A, which is, I believe, another statute that Representative Gruenberg worked on that makes it a crime to tamper with, circumvent, or mess with these devices. And since they are monitored on a monthly basis, It's fairly easy to catch someone that's rigged around the ignition system.
And if I may, Mr. Chairman and Representative Dahlstrom, as Representative Grunberg has indicated, this technology has been around a while. It was around in the 80s, and I think we're at a point now where they're pretty foolproof, although as soon as I say that, somebody's going to find a way around it. But again, I think the vendors will be able to tell us how they can prevent people from getting around. In fact, I know the technologies there now where they can almost tell by your breath or by your saliva if it's really you or somebody else, you know, blowing into it for you. And some of them even have cameras installed that they can monitor. So I think we're getting close to having a foolproof system.
Rep. Samuels?
Thank you. On those lines, one of my notes here for penalties was the bypass. Do you know what the penalty is for bypass offhand? If not, I can get with you later.
Representative Samuels, it's in B. It's a, through the chair, maximum term of imprisonment that may be imposed is 30 days, and the maximum fine is $500.
And
yes, sir. It's considered a misdemeanor.
And if somebody else blows into the device?
Through the chair, Representative Samuels, I defer to Department of Law on that. I'm not sure if it would fall under that statute, but
yeah. Common sense would dictate if they blew into it and they weren't drunk that they should let them drive. Yeah. But
common sense doesn't always prevail, Representative.
Always prevail.
Okay, I think what I'd like to do I'm just keeping an eye on the clock. We have Commissioner Monaghan is here. We have people over the phone. We have a trooper in uniform. We appreciate seeing you here. Thanks for joining us today, sir. We've got a representative from Smart Start, somebody from DMV, the Alaska Court System, somebody from CHAR, and two individuals. So I think, gentlemen, what we'd like to do is to have those folks come forward, and we'll just kind of wrestle through things today as best as we can, and then get as far as we can by 3 o'clock, recognizing that we have...
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And a lot of the questions that you have, I think, will be answered by these folks.
Okay. Let's go first to Labette Knorr with Smart Start. That's one of the vendors. Is that right? That's Labette, are you with us? Yes, Labette, are you with us? Ms. Knorr?
I am. Can you hear me?
Yes, if you'd state your name and who you're affiliated with for the record and give us a presentation, and then I think we have some questions for you.
Okay. My name is Babette Miller, and I represent Smart Start. I guess the first thing I'd like to reference is the cold climate. We've been in Fairbanks for a year and a half now. We've actually only installed one unit up in Fort Yukon, and when we installed that unit and we spoke with the judge up there, they actually stated that their breathalyzer was broken, and since the orders for ignition interlocks were based on blood alcohol level, that there would, at this point, be no more orders up there until they obtained another breathalyzer. So we've had that unit up there through the whole winter. He has had no problems at all. In Fairbanks, for the last year and a half, we have installed approximately, I believe we're up to 80 units there. And we have one gentleman that has had a problem. He has no heat in his vehicle. He had a problem one time. But other than that, we've had, you know, no issues with the cold and people being able to start their car. The only thing that, at this point, that has prevented them is when they've been drinking. We've had one unit in Nome, and throughout the rest of Alaska, we have them, you know, all along southeast. We have them in Ketchikan, Sitka, Juneau. We have them in Dillingham, Kodiak, Valdez, Delta, Glen Allen, Homer, Kenai, pretty much, you know, all over the whole state. And, you know, we've just seen good results from them. as to it fitting in all vehicles, we mount these units underneath their dash. We actually take their dash apart and install the units. So the units are concealed except for the breathalyzer itself, which comes out of the steering column, and that's the piece that they blow into and the piece that they can unplug. It does fit in every vehicle. There's, you know, to this point, no vehicle that we've, you know, not been able to install them on. And I'm unaware of any vehicle at this point that they are, you know, not able to be installed in. And I believe the testing of our units have been to negative 40 degrees Celsius in a controlled environment. Out of the controlled environment, of course, has been up in Fort Yukon and in Nome and in Fairbanks, where, you know, over the last month it has gotten really cold. They're starting to warm up now, but I'm sure you're all aware of what the temperatures have been up there over the last month.
With all due respect, it's been a pretty warm winter.
Has it?
Yeah. Yeah, last winter was, we had 50 below temperatures last winter. How, did you have units that were installed in the winter of 05, 06?
Yes, we did.
Okay. Are there questions for Ms. Miller? Representative Holmes?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Following up on my earlier question, Labette, have you had any requests for units in more rural areas of the state, and how have you handled that? And if not, do you have any insight on what it would take to install units in areas, say, off the road system or in more rural areas?
Fort Yukon, we actually flew into and did the installs. And, you know, we've done that in a lot of areas throughout the state. And what we do is, we pretty much pick up two areas within the state that we take a loss at. So we will, for instance, Fort Yukon and Nome, we had one client in each one of those communities. So we went into those areas, installed the units, flew back to service them, and did that whenever it was needed. In areas that you know, there are more orders, such as Dillingham. At this time, we have a contractor there, but before we had a contractor in Dillingham, we would wait until we had four or five orders for units, and then we would fly out there at that time.
How many vendors are there? Is it a competitive market?
At this time, there's two vendors, I believe, within Alaska. But we try to pick up contractors in all the areas that we go into, so that there's somebody local that can service the individuals that are required to have it.
What is the cost of the unit? I know the monthly service is $125. Is that right? What is the cost of the unit itself? Is it a $500 unit or a $1,000 unit?
Well, the units, we can't purchase the units. SmartStart is actually a franchise that is across the United States, and so we lease the units.
I see.
So we in turn lease them to the client, but I believe the replacement cost of the unit, if one is stolen or, you know, lost, is $1,500.
I see. So if it was damaged in a car accident, for instance, that's how much you would try to recover in a loss for the unit itself.
Right.
Any other questions? Labette, thank you very much. If you would stand by, we would appreciate it. We may have questions to come back to you.
Okay.
Thank you very much for your testimony.
And thank you very much.
Yes, ma'am. And then Dwayne Bannock is here from the DMV to answer questions. Are you with us, Director?
Good afternoon, Mr. Chairman. Yes, sir, I am.
Are there initial questions for Director Bannock, or do you want to go ahead and try and field some of the – oh, I'm sorry, Representative Grunberg?
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Bannock, do you have the State Affairs CS in front of you?
Yes, sir.
Under current law, is the Department of Public Safety authorized to issue a limited license?
Representative Grunberg, through the chair, the reference to the department there would be the Department of Administration. And so, yes, sir, under current law, the Department of Administration has the ability to issue a limited license.
Okay. I'm looking on line 9. By the way, there appears to be a typographical. The words, and this is just to the sponsor of the bill, the words "that is" probably should be "must be."
On what page?
I'm on page 2, line 9. That grammatically doesn't seem to make sense. Maybe I'm reading it wrong. But my question to you, Mr. Bannock, is the use of the word "certificate" on line 9. Don't you just issue a license? It's not a certificate, is it? Shouldn't it just say limited license?
Representative Grunberg, through the chair, I believe that's probably a very accurate statement.
So I'll make an amendment at the appropriate time to delete the word certificate, and then I'll talk to the sponsor about the term "must be" rather than "that is." Thank you, Mr. Bannock.
Are there other immediate questions for Director Bannock? Coghill?
Mr. Chairman, I had some process questions, and maybe I'll just add one more so that Mr. Bannock can take them all on, I suppose. Just curious what a administrative revocation under this new law would look like outside of the courts.
Representative Coghill, through the chair, there's not a new administrative revocation. They're staying exactly the same. What, in essence, this bill does from a process point of view at the DMV is literally redefines what a limited license is and what the driver is able to do with the limited license compared to what the way the rules are today.
Mr. Bannock, this is Representative Coghill again. But because we are repealing limited license provision, I think your authority still falls beyond that. And I may be mistaken, but I was just wondering, outside of a court order, how you would handle this, the requirement, because you're getting certain authorities in here that put you on equal footing with the court with regard to putting the demand for a interlock device.
Representative Coghill, if I'm following you correctly, I believe that if we refer to that same sentence that Representative Grunberg was just directing us to, page 2 of line 10, it is very clear, in my opinion, that Chapter 28.15.201 does allow the limited to be granted by either the court or the department.
Do you have that statute there?
I do have it here. And, Madam Chair, I just we lost Representative Ramirez, but if I might continue.
Yes, you may.
We need a coup.
It says, yeah, or the department when revoking a driver's license privilege, and then it gives you the may grant interlock privileges. And so I just want to know how you would expect to use that authority outside of the court's authority.
Representative Coghill, I'm not tracking that we're losing the authority to revoke a license anywhere in this bill.
I understand that, but what I'm asking is, outside of a court order, it looks to me like you have the authority under Section F to grant the privilege to drive with an interlock device, because it says the court or the department, when revoking a driver's license, then you may grant interlock limited license privileges. So I'm just curious, Mr. Bannock, how you intend to proceed outside of a court order.
Representative Coghill, you are stumping me right now, and I'd like an opportunity to come back to that if I may.
Yes, sir, you sure may.
Madam Chair, may I follow up on that, please?
Yes, Representative Grunberg.
I don't have that particular statute. Is this from you? Yeah, right. I don't have that statute in front of me. Would you cite me where in Alaska law it gives the DMV authority to issue a limited license. Could you give me the statutory aside on that, please?
Representative Groomberg, is that directed to DMV?
I'm sorry, would you say again?
I'm guessing you were directing that question to me, sir. I'm sorry.
You bet.
We're looking at 2815201.
Just a second. 2815. Okay. Okay. I'm looking at that, and maybe I'm, what? Oh, okay, the part. Okay, I see in sub D, it gives, I'm looking at the current language, which we have set out in the bill, but apparently that talks about a department when revoking a driver's license. Is that your only authority, that passing reference?
Representative Groomberg, again, forgive me, I'm not I have not done homework on that question, and rather than boring the committee mumbling through this, I'd like a mulligan on that.
Yeah. Mr. Chairman, I'm content to wait for the answer to the question, because I think it's something that both the department and the Department of Law should probably look at.
Mr. Chair, if I may follow up on that, this is Groenberg again for the record.
It always is.
I happen to be, and I don't think anybody else on this committee is, on the Department of Administration's subcommittee for finance. And one of the things that we're going to be hearing from you this week, from this week, is you and the transition team's recommendations. Are one of the recommendations is that DMV should be moved from the Department of Administration to a more fitting department. And you have said a minute ago in answer to a question from me that the term department in AS 2815201D refers to Department of Administration. I'd like you to comment, is it likely that DMV is going to move from Department of Administration? And is that then going to refer to a different department or whatever?
Through the chairman, Representative Groenberg, I'm not prepared to comment on that discussion today.
Well, maybe you could think on that one, too. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
You're welcome. Are there other questions for the director? Dwayne, does it change any of the authority that the Department of Administration and the DMV currently have, or does this bill leave things status quo?
Mr. Chairman, we believe that it does leave it status quo, and pursuant to my earlier comments, simply redefines the behavior that can be performed with a DMV-issued limited license.
Representative Groenberg.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Bannock, through the chair, does the DMV currently issue limited licenses?
Representative Groenberg, yes, sir, we do. And in fact, perhaps the reason that the word certificate is used in the draft language that you and I spoke of just moments ago, in our current behavior today, we don't actually produce a driver's license. We produce a piece of paper, and we encourage the applicant to get an identification card to go along with it. What we have proposed, if this bill is to pass, that because we are anticipating more people taking advantage of it and that the limited licenses be in use for longer periods of time, we are prepared to actually create a new limited driver's license. So the applicant here will actually have a piece of plastic in their pocket.
Mr. Chair.
Yes.
So then this is going to possibly be used, this bill, if it passes in its current form, is going to be used by you to expand the DMV's authority to issue a new driver's license.
Representative Groenberg, I don't know that that's an accurate assessment at all. It changes the format of the document as opposed to a piece of paper. I don't know that it's governed under statute or regulation. We are taking advantage of the bill, to use your words, to change the actual document itself from a piece of paper to a plastic card.
Through the chair, if I may continue.
Rep. Kernberg, please.
Under what circumstances would the Division of Motor Vehicles issue the license, a limited license, when a court has originally not done so? When do people go to court? When do they go to the DMV, and who decides?
Representative Grunberg, oftentimes it's both. As you're aware, there are administrative actions, and then there are criminal actions. Oftentimes, DUIs are subject to both. Sometimes DUIs are subject to only one of those tracks.
Well, could a person apply to the court for a limited license, be turned down, and then go to the DMV?
Yes.
Is that good public policy?
The court has a greater authority to issue a limited license. The DMV has a very limited, pardon the pun, authority to issue a limited license. In fact, we have some evidence that suggests that the courts don't like doing it. I have a court order where a customer did apply to the courts for expanded limited driver's licenses. The customer that both you and I have spoken to a great amount of time, the judge actually wrote on the order, go see DMV for a limited because I'm not going to give you one.
Thank you. I just think that this committee needs to consider what's going on here.
And this committee shall. And we're going to for those that are listening, we're going to we certainly are going to hold the bill today, and then our Wednesday meeting has been preempted by the attendance of the 3-star and general 4-star admiral, and session has been moved to 1 o'clock, and then on Thursday we move Teresa Foster's presentation.
We're still going to be doing rural justice on Wednesday starting at 1:30.
Rural justice, and on Thursday we've got some overviews, so it's highly likely that we'll take this up again next Monday, I think is probably for those listening, just to give you a sense, but we'll get as far as we can on this issue now. And Director Bannock, just a point of reference, this year, you know, it's just my third year here with in this body, but it seems this year the legislature is calling on you a great deal to address drunken driving in our communities in a very acute way, whether it's Representative Meyer's bill. I know Representative Crawford's got some bills in that my office does. So we just thank you for being a steady reference. If you would stand by a little bit and let us, I'd like to take these people online that that are some individuals that have called in. Is Rodney Hebert with us?
Yes, I am.
If you'd introduce yourself, your name for the record, please.
Through the chair, my name is Rodney Hebert, and I am from Fairbanks, actually.
Go ahead with your remarks, please, Mr. Hebert.
I would just like to remark on some of the stuff that was brought up today and punishment issues as far as limited licensing going is easing up on the defendants. Now, we got jail time, alcohol assessments, license suspension, car impoundment, court appearances, and fines that we require people that are busted for driving under the influence. On top of that, what this bill would do is introduce another sanction, which would be implementation of the ignition interlock device on their cars, plus the expenses. This would allow the defendant to go not only from work to home and home to work, but it would allow them to properly care for their kids that are going to school or in after-school activities or before-school activities. It would allow them to make their doctor's appointments and even allow them to go to treatment that we require them to go to now. Including but not limit them to go to AA meetings or NA meetings. You know, it would just, I think, allow us to really work for getting them off of welfare, because that's where they go to when they lose their job because they can't drive. They go to the welfare office, and we end up taking care of them anyway after they get out of jail. I see this as a very good idea in helping to protect society and help to, you know, implement punishment in a safe and good way, that we're not just taking people out of the society, you know, and putting them on skid row. We know that people do make mistakes, and they make them over and over again before they finally learn. I am one of those guys that kept making the same mistake over and over and over again. And now I am trying to, I did straighten my life out with the help of God. And, you know, I got a good job, I got a good life, and it is just hampered by not really being able to live life to its fullest. You know, I go cross-country skiing. In order to go cross-country skiing at 9:30 at night, I got to take a cab out to Kincaid Park, you know, which is a $30 one-way trip. And then when I want to come back, my cell phones don't work out there, so I ski to the nearest cell phone reception and call a cab and trying to explain to them where I'm at to get back. But I think that, you know, this is just a win-win situation for everybody if we can work around the issues of administrative sanctions and who's going to try and take care of this without too much problems. We really want to help people recover from problems of alcoholism, not just push them off to the curb and say you're incorrigible, or, you know, there's no help for you. You know, your life is over. We need to really embrace these guys and say, you know what, there is a way, and we have a way that we want you to try, and maybe this will be the answer for you.
Very good. Are there questions for Mr. Hebert? Mr. Hebert, thank you for taking time out of your day to participate in the committee process in the legislature. We thank you for your insight, and you helped to legitimize the things that we're doing here. Thank you very much, sir.
Well, thank you for taking the time to hear this bill and to consider passing it into law.
Thank you very much, Mr. Hebert. Next, if we could go to Narda Butler, please. Is Narda with us?
I am.
Hi, Narda. If you'd state your name for the record, please.
My name is Narda Butler. Through the chair, I'm privileged to be able to speak to you all today. I kind of come from the other side of the tracks, the proverbial tracks, from Rodney, although it is my relationship and the relationship of my family with Rodney that has brought this issue into my awareness. I am the mother of 5 children, 4 of whom are teenagers right now, 3 of whom are drivers. I'm very concerned about the safety of the roads my kids drive on. The flip side is we have been able to, as a family, walk with Rodney through a period of recovery and have been quite impressed with the effort and the energy that someone has to express in order to be able to become a self-supporting, contributing member of society. And that raised my awareness as to how can we, one, safely, and two, fairly provide for all members in society. And so that's why I brought the idea of an Ignition Interlock expanded program to Kevin Meyer earlier, or late last year. There, as you guys have focused on kind of the details, the nitty-gritty of what this means, I'd like to back up a little bit and make just a couple of points about the global picture here. And the most important one I think we need to recognize, and I don't think it's been stated today, is that statistically, 50 to 75% of drivers whose driver's licenses have been revoked are driving anyway. When we begin to talk about whether or not this is really a relief from punishment, we need to face the fact that what you and I may perceive as a punishment may not be actually happening on the street. Because most people with driver's licenses revoked drive anyway, I am absolutely in favor of putting a piece of technology on board in their car to serve as an onboard probation officer to monitor their activity. I can't personally, and we can't corporately, legislate anything that will prohibit alcoholism, but we can utilize technology in order to make our highways safer. And I think that's a really important point. I appreciate the attention to all the details. I would like to heartily endorse the passage of this as we move toward laws in Alaska that approach best practices as they've been expressed in other parts of the country. I've done a lot of research on this, and I am perfectly happy to share that if anyone is interested. And I think that about sums up what I need to share with you today. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Narda. Are there any questions for Ms. Butler?
I would just like to say.
Yes, Representative Lynn.
You know, the details of all this stuff are very, very important, but I really want to thank you for bringing us back to the major focus of this, trying to figure out how to make it work. And I think it sounds like a voice of common sense to me.
Thank you, Narda. We appreciate your testimony today. Any other questions for Ms. Butler? Thank you, ma'am. And Dale Fox is with us with Char. Are you there, Dale?
Dale Fox with Alaska Char. Just a couple of very short comments. Alaska Char supports the concept of ignition interlocks, particularly for repeat offenders, people who have had high BAC offenses, and obviously those people who, after an offense, drive with a revoked license. Like many of the members of the committee, we're here to learn how the details of this program would work, and we will no doubt have comments as the bill progresses. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you. Are there any questions for Dale Fox from CHAR? Thank you, Dale. So that would take us to Doug Wolliver, who's with the court system. And you're available to answer questions. Are you with us, Doug?
Yes, Mr. Chairman. Thank you. Doug Wolliver from the court. I was just here for questions.
Are there any questions for any representative from the court system?
Oh, I think I'll save my questions. Doug, this is Max Gruenberg. We'll chat with Mr. Pulaski and you.
Very good.
Okay, thank you, Doug. And if you'll stand by, because it's only a quarter past two. All right, that exhausts those people that we have online. Do we have anybody here that wants to offer testimony? Annie?
I just have a couple of comments on two sections. I don't know whether you're ready to deal with the nitty-gritty of the bill. So I can wait till another time.
All right, is there anybody else in the room?
I wonder if Ms. Carpinetti could give us the benefit of her thinking now, because we're going to have some time to then deal with that.
Yes, Annie, sure, come on up. Commissioner, do you have any remarks that you want to make, or are you just listening today?
Actually, what I would like to do is just again offer my support.
Okay. All right. Hi, Annie.
Hi. I just had a couple of technical comments on sections 4 and 5 of the bill, which have already been alluded to by Representative Holmes. We have some concerns about limiting the length of probation after DWI that the CS, I think, would do. And I really don't think that either section 4 or 5 are necessary, because there's always already a provision in Title 12, 55, 102, which allows a court to order interlock devices as a condition of probation for alcohol-related offenses. I just wanted to draw those two sections to your attention. I don't think they're necessary, and I think they could be detrimental.
Mr. Chair, I'm planning to offer an amendment to this. These were my amendments in State Affairs. I'm not going to offer it today, but just to see the way I'm thinking, and no pride in authorship here, sorry. I'll pass it out so you can see what I'm talking about. It was the intent of this, once assuming the amendment to this is adopted, was to add this time following the period of probation.
5 additional years after. Would make a
difference. For the sole purpose of requiring the ignition interlocks to be added if the court finds that the public safety requires it. And you're absolutely right. That was, we made a promise to the chair and the members of the State Affairs Committee that we would cure the problem. And I don't know, we'll have to talk to the bill drafter, and I'd like you to take a look at it and the sponsor and everybody else. But that's our intent. I thought that you said you had two comments.
It was section 4 and 5 both sections.
Representative Kako.
Maybe while Ms. Carbonetti's here. Just any thoughts on that section F, which is a new section? It's mirroring language that is elsewhere in the code. But the section 2.
Where are you at, Rosa?
Page 2, section 2. And this is actually the place where the revocation conditions are lined out. And Ms. Carpinetti, the court in revoking a driver's license is in the first portion of that, or the department when revoking a driver's license, and both of them may grant ignition interlock limited license privileges. And so in my mind, I'm trying to get a concept of how that actually lands in the day-to-day procedures. When a department may be able to grant that outside of a court order.
There are two types of license revocations for a person who's been, one, arrested for drunk driving or refusal, and for a person who's been convicted. There's the administrative process. When a person is arrested for drunk driving or refusal to submit to the breathalyzer, the officer who's arresting takes that license and gives the person a piece of paper, and I'm sure that our trooper here has more details on how it works, but that starts the process of the administrative revocation of a license for refusal or drunk driving, and that can happen even if a person is not convicted in court of drunk driving. Under those circumstances, the court can also revoke the person's license. Generally, they run at the same time. But that's the process for administrative revocation is described in 2815.165. And that's why this new section looks at both administrative and court revocations, because there are two possible revocations.
Mr. Chairman, I generally knew that, although you helped clarify that. So what we're doing is extending authority to require an interlock device they have administrative appeals, but they have a process they have to go through too. And I'm just wondering if we're going to give them authority, if somehow the court shouldn't be involved in this discussion, because generally speaking, we're going to do this in place of license revocation that a court order. So it's kind of ratcheted up a little bit from just a administrative revocation. Am I wrong?
Through the chair, I think you might be, although I'm not sure. I mean, right now the law allows the Department of Administration to grant a limited license, as it does the court to grant a limited license. And that's in 2815.201D, which would be repealed under this provision of this bill. And it substitutes this procedure, which is going to interlock device instead of what is current law, which sets out procedures for when a limited license can be granted. I don't know that it it just adopts a different set of procedures for granting a limited license requiring Interlock device rather than the standard set out in current law 2815-201D. Am I making myself, or is, am I helping? Yeah.
Well, because I don't wander in this law a whole lot, and I'm just, in my mind, trying to figure out, are we ratcheting up the department's authority? Are we going to require more accountability measures for them? Is there, is it something that should have the force of court at a different, in a different setting? Those are the kind of questions that are coming into my mind, because at this particular case, not only are we going to have them required to have Interlock devices under an administrative, but also in lieu of kind of the probationary discussion that we're having here. So I think it extends the authority of the administration significantly. It just appears to me, and I'm going to have to march down through this myself. I'll probably do some homework on it, but it looks to me like it might make driving safer on roads. I'll grant you that, but I want to make sure that we don't turn our DMV into a whole new court agency without some oversight. So,
through the chair, you might look at it in a different way, because this really sets pretty narrow standards for when you can have a driver limited license, and that's if you have the ignition interlock device. So in a certain way, it takes away some discretion.
And that's the privilege of getting to look into law that you don't very often get to look into. Either. How did we get here? You know? So I will do some studying. Thank you for your answers. That is very helpful.
Representative Grunberg.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And, this isn't directly to you, but may I go back to Mr. Bannock for a minute?
Yes, I have a question for Mr. Bannock also. Annie, thank you very much.
I don't know. It may be that we'll have a question.
Wayne, are you there? Did we lose Mr. Bannock?
Mr. Chairman, now I am. Thank you.
Okay, very good. Representative Grunberg, and then I have a question for you also.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chair. You and I had a conversation a few weeks ago about your hearing process. This is following up on Representative Coghill's questions, which I kind of trailed off on a minute ago. And the question was, the way your process for holding hearings, and you have some hearing officers, you are not under the Administrative Law Judge Act. Your cases are not tried by the Central Panel of Administrative Law Judges. And I've just been reading a case that was appealed by Ms. Pearson's husband. He won the appeal. And I forget the name of the case, where there were some serious, in my opinion, serious deficiencies in the way a hearing was conducted procedurally, and that resulted in a reversal of an administrative, I think, suspension of a license or revocation of a license. And I was wondering if you could provide to this committee, at your earliest convenience, within the last 2 or 3 years, the number, the percentage of reversals of your of cases that have been heard by your hearing officers, what your rate of reversal has been. Do you know?
Representative Grunberg, through the chair, we will be happy to provide that information. I don't mean to be a smart aleck, but I would say anecdotally the numbers are very slim in being overturned. Indeed, I am slightly familiar with the case that you mentioned. I don't really want to talk about it today, but it's fair to say that that is a very unusual event, and there were a lot of there were some certain detail to that that I don't believe that we have a policy problem about.
Well, that's good. I'm heartened to hear that. And if you could provide that information, that will help, and maybe be prepared to address that issue of the hearing officer versus administrative law judge, either and in this committee or the administrative subcommittee.
Director Bannock?
Mr. Chairman.
Yeah, can you get us that in the next half hour or so?
No.
Dwayne, here's my question for you today, please. This would expand the universe of people that are driving. Period. They would otherwise have suspended driver's licenses. I'm seeing the Mike Pulowski nod. So my question to you is I'd like to know two numbers if I can. You've told me in previous conversations that we've had that you believe that there are an estimated 500,000 Alaska driver's licenses out, even though a number of those people have taken Alaska driver's licenses and have left the state of Alaska. So my question is, what is the universe of people that are presently, whose licenses are, whose licenses are presently suspended, and what is the universe of potential drivers that would regain their driving privileges under this ignition interlock system that currently are off the roads?
Mr. Chairman, I've got a couple of answers, and then if I can just add another comment to the end of my answer, with your permission. We can get the number of how many are currently suspended and revoked. If I could refer you to my fiscal note, the fiscal note gives our best guesstimation, that's a word, guesstimation, of how many customers may be taking advantage of the new version of a limited license. To make a painfully long story short, 300 annually is the number that we have established. Now, I'm here to tell you, as a good bureaucrat, we put some science into that number, but because it is a brand new program, I'll reserve the right to come before you next year and say, I was off, but that does answer that question, that we are projecting 300 additional customers that will take advantage of this.
Is Director, if I could follow up with you again, is that redundant?
It's like having an ATM machine.
My question is, a significant purpose of this bill that the sponsor is offering is because we believe that people that shouldn't be driving are driving anyway. And so we're now going to restore driving privileges to those people that previously we didn't think should be driving at all. And we're saying that they're not a risk if they're sober, as opposed to what we previously been saying, which is we don't want them on our roads. And I just want to just explore that for my own benefit for a little bit, because if that's true, then the only part of the population we're targeting are those who choose not to follow our laws anyway.
Mr. Chairman, that is a very good question. It's a very good statement, one that the bill sponsor and I have spoken about. I'm here today representing the Division of Motor Vehicles, which, as it pertains to this bill, we're the paper pushers in it. We're not necessarily here to create that policy or what the rule should be, but rather, if you decide that this is a good public policy and that it outweighs the harm that is being done today, we're here to implement it.
Okay. Thank you, Director. Then that takes me back to my question, which is I'd like to define these various universes. I'd like to know how many people have their licenses suspended. You have defined in the fiscal note how many people you think this would apply to. For that matter, I'd like to also see if you can get a figure for me on those people that would be felony drunk drivers, or those that are involved, have been involved in a vehicular manslaughter or type of an accident that's alcohol related. I want to better understand this universe of people for whom we're considering a rather cumbersome application. Even if it is potentially successful, it certainly is more cumbersome than just saying you can't drive.
Mr. Chairman, we can provide some of those numbers for you, not all of them, because some of those numbers aren't simply tracked by the DMV. But if I could make a comment to kind of close this loop just a little bit, and forgive me for not having this answer about 10 minutes ago when Representative Gruenberg asked it. If we can go to the new language in Section F on page 2, where does the DMV have the ability to issue a limited license when the DMV revokes it? You will find that on line 5 of page 2. Now, that language is almost identical to the language that's being deleted in D, like Duane. That's what allows it today. Now, the reason that that statement is pertinent to your question, there are two statutes that are cited, and Ms. Carpinetti kind of touched on this briefly. In the new section F, 2815-181 and 2815-165, this bill is not aimed for everything that you could potentially lose a driver's license for. This bill is aimed at two things that you could lose your driver's license for, a DUI or a refusal. And whether or not that DUI or refusal comes as a result of a court conviction or as of an administrative action, that's what this is about.
Okay, can you still get me those numbers?
We will do our best, but some of the things that you asked for are not measurables at the DMV.
Which specifically are not measurable?
We don't record felonies. We don't record a felony as something different than a non-felony DUI.
Okay, how can help me out then through the bureaucratic maze? How can I separate that figure? Who do I need to go to in order to determine the, you know, because this bill raises an interesting issue. We're putting the most egregious offenders, giving them an opportunity to get back on the road. And some of us may approach this more conservatively and say, we just prefer not to have those people on the road, period. So how can I, do I want to go to Doug again back in the court system and query him for a figure like this, or how do I find this out?
Mr. Chairman, I would certainly recommend that that the answer to your felony questions definitely come from my friends at the court system, and maybe Ms. Carpinetti from Department of Law, perhaps. I try not to speak for them. But that's it. Yeah, thank you.
That was good thinking. Okay, so the question that I'm still formulating is what part of the population are we targeting that we're going to allow people that shouldn't be driving at all back onto the roads? Now, your fiscal note indicates a conservative estimate of 300. So this whole ignition interlock enhancement, in your opinion, targets a population across the state of Alaska of 300, say, in its first year. Is that kind of your sense, Director?
Yes, sir, it is. And the question that I think we can answer for you right down to the nth degree is I can provide you with a number of customers that are currently revoked as a result of DUI or refusal. And that would show you the big picture. From that number, we could then extrapolate how many of them today currently have a limited license. And again, today the limited definition is drive from home to work, work to home. And then from that number, you and I maybe would agree that 300 is not the right number. But and forgive me because I don't have them directly in front of me, but those are the numbers that we can get for you. It will not include numbers for people that, let's say, were revoked for driving while revoked or suspended, people that have point suspensions, people that have insurance violations or something like that. That's not addressed in this bill.
Okay, and Director, if I may continue with a couple more questions. Let's say I'm one of those 300 people, and let's say that I have a substance abuse problem. And on some days it's defined by alcohol, some days it's defined by methamphetamine or marijuana or whatever I can get my hands on. If the ignition interlock is capable of detecting alcohol, isn't somebody that has a broader substance abuse problem, aren't we giving them permission to get back on our road system with a limited driver's license that they can use the breathalyzer component of the ignition interlock against the general public and just choose a different, you know, flavor of substance abuse, and we are allowing them back onto our road system, and the roads now arguably are more dangerous. In fact, we create an unintended consequence with this ignition interlock for somebody that has a broader substance abuse problem and is going to substitute a substance that's not detectable by the ignition interlock system.
Mr. Chairman, that's a plausible example. That is correct.
Okay. Lieutenant Dial, would you pop up here, please, and give me a little insight into the issue that I raised. Are there other questions for the director while we still have him back on the line? This is for the committee. This is Lieutenant Rodney Dial. You're the assistant ledge liaison, is that right?
Yes, Mr. Chairman.
We are honored to have you here, especially in uniform. It's nice to see you, sir. We appreciate everything that the state troopers do for our communities across the state. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Can you help me with, I mean, I just kind of stumbled on that. I mean, I was just trying to think backwards and out of the box, and Representative Coghill's taught me about unintended consequences for a couple of years, whether you know it or not. You're an excellent instructor in that way. And so what do we do about somebody like that that's going to get high? And we got a plan now. They're like, oh, I can't use alcohol, so I'll substitute it for A, B, C, or D. Are we making ourselves potentially more vulnerable to this population?
Mr. Chairman, I would agree with the director in that that is a possibility. A potential solution to that could be to not allow this for individuals who have known substance abuse problems other than alcohol. However, we do support this as another tool to help address some of the problems that we see out there. We would also continue to investigate any crime of driving while under the influence, whether or not the vehicle is equipped with the ignition interlock device or not.
I have more questions. Are there any other questions right off the bat for Lieutenant Dial? Mr. Pralowski, could you come up here? Clearly I support the sponsor's legislation. We all just want to make it better. How can we address this? I mean, I have a labor pool that if you disallow alcohol, the very first thing they're going to go do is find an alternate substance, and they're going to laugh all the way to wherever that destination is. And then, in fact, we're doing the opposite of what we're trying to do. We have created a false sense of security amongst the public, and actually we're all just as jeopardized. What approach can we take to, I think, did you just murmur about felonies or people that have been convicted to not make this available to them? Or how do we address that with people that are just going to chase different substance abuse substitutes?
Mr. Chairman, at this point, I think the lieutenant's comment is a well-taken one, that you might find ways to limit who it goes to through the court system. I think it's something we'd have to sit down, do some time to investigate, because I really have to go back to the sponsor's intent in bringing it forward, is that believing that simply because someone can't get a limited license is keeping people from driving anywhere they want to is not the reality of what's going on out there. And that really is the sponsor's concern, is when you get down to the numbers and look at the 800 or 900 arrests every year for someone driving with a revoked or suspended license while under the influence, that's 800 or 900 extra intoxicated people on our streets. And with ignition interlock devices, 90% to 95% while they're driving with that ignition interlock in the car aren't repeating. That's what he looked at when he started investigating this bill. It was a very difficult discussion from the issues Representative Samuels and you and the committee had brought up, but it was an on balance, a trade-off between the offenders and the public.
Representative Holmes?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Follow-up to your question. I understand that there have been a number of other states that have gone this route and allowed ignition interlocks. I'm wondering whether there might be any studies or any data from some of these other jurisdictions as to whether people have been pulled over who have ignition functioning ignition interlocks but are driving under the influence of some other substance. Maybe there's some data that we could look for before we hear the bill.
Chair Representative Holmes, I'll look for that, but I
Yeah, Mr. Chairman,
Representative Cochran.
Just on a data set on that, it might be interesting how many vehicles have been cited with a moving violation or with a traffic accident, for lack of a better word, with an interlock device already engaged. That might help us with some data.
Mr. Pawlowski, does that do you and the sponsor believe that the universe of people that would go to the ignition interlock system is larger than the 300 that are cited in the director's fiscal note? Is that your sense, that it's a bigger universe than
through,
that?
Through the chair, Mr. Chairman, I believe it is significantly larger than what the director's talking about, simply because the only access to a limited license for DUI offense under this law would be an ignition interlock license. And if you consider that roughly 5,000 Alaskans are arrested every year for DUI, I have to believe that it's a lot more than 300 on an annual basis, unless people would just decide not to get any limited license whatsoever.
Director Bannock, are you there?
Yes, Mr. Chairman.
Will the, not that it matters when it comes to public safety in this regard, but will the fiscal note move up in relationship to those 300 if there's 600 additional customers? Would it double the fiscal note?
Mr. Chairman, it won't double the fiscal note, but if the number goes up, it will have an impact. Much of the fiscal note is some programming.
The programming, what does that mean?
Sorry, sir. The computer programming, setting ourselves up for this program.
Right. The cost of equipment is, so the relationship, the relationship that the customer has with Smart Start, that's between the two, those two parties, and then that information is fed to DMV. Is that how that goes when you say the setup for your organization?
Yes to the first part of your question. No. What I'm speaking of in regards to the $12,000 in the first column that you will see in fiscal year 08, there's $12,000. $10,000 of those dollars are in creating the computer programming to actually manufacture a new limited license based on the data input. Right now, as I shared with you earlier, we don't actually create a driver's license. We create a piece of paper.
And what are the personal services expense that's related to
Right now, Mr. Chairman, right now I have one employee that is dedicated to the limited driver's license program as we know it. I'm proposing to add an additional employee, so I will have two employees working the limited driver's license.
So, Director, if I understand this correctly, if I get one of these ignition interlock devices, the $125 a month that I would pay would go 100% to cover the lease obligation, but wouldn't go at all toward satisfying the state's cost to implement the program.
Mr. Chairman, let me answer it this way. There is a fee to apply for a limited license. It is a different fee than what we've heard about Smart Start. The fees collected by Ms. Miller do not in any way, shape, or form come back to the state. But in my change of revenues, it is an additional $100 to apply for a limited license. When the license is actually issued, it's another $20.
See, but that's not enough to offset the cost of the extra manpower to set up and maintain the program. Is that correct?
Yes, sir. You are correct with that.
Lieutenant Dial, do you have any other insights that you can share with us? Just some broad, any broad remarks or specific remarks?
Mr. Chairman, I would reiterate what has been said here about the high number of people who have revoked licenses that we find out there every day we're driving. And our hope is that this may cut down on that somewhat. We do make a significant number of arrests and spend a significant amount of time investigating those type of crimes every year. So if this will help in that regard, it would be positive for the Department of Public Safety.
Okay. Representative Samuels?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I guess for either one of you, do you know the percentage of DUIs that are repeat? If you pull over 100 people, how many of them have been caught before?
Through the chair, Representative Samuels, I do not know that information offhand. I can find that information out, though.
And if possible, I didn't think you'd know, but the real question is how many of them are getting caught the second time in the same car they got caught in the first time? So if we're saying we're going to put an interlock on your own car and the reason we're doing the entire law is because they're driving anyway, are we just spinning our wheels because they're just going to drive anyway, even with the plan? The people that are out there, I mean, I can't tell you how much it infuriates me, and I can't imagine what it is like for you, sir, that we spend so much money at this fraction of people that cause so many problems, you know, on the roads or domestic violence, all the booze-related things, this many people, and we all spend so much money trying to fix this small amount of people. It is the most frustrating thing in the world. And I can't imagine being a cop on the street and having to deal with it.
Through the chair, Representative Samuels, personally, I've made hundreds of DWI arrests in my career. Primarily in the first years that I started and worked the road and worked many rural posts like Talkeetna and Willow and the highways. My personal experience is, in most cases, they're driving the same car. What I found amazing was how many of those individuals who were driving while intoxicated had a sober individual in the car. And personally, when I look at this, I guess I would hope that it would be another reminder not only to the driver but the person in the car that maybe this is for real and maybe you should drive the car. That's just my personal experience.
If there's any stats on that, that'd be great. I don't know how easy the same car question would be.
If I may, just my own comments here to kind of wind things up. I intend to vote for this bill, and I think it's good policy. And the question that I would put to both of you in your present capacity is, can you help me feel better that we can make this into a better bill, even than the one we get? Certainly sections 4 and 5 need some review, and we thank Representative Gruenberg for that. But, you know, as the Vice Chair and I were kind of whispering back and forth about this issue, I mean, Rep. Samuels, you're really talking about a collection of people that have compulsive behavioral traits. They like to drink too much, and then they like to get into a car and move it from one place to another as if they're perfectly sober. And you're not going to make that behavior go away, is I think what I'm saying and what Representative Samuels is suggesting by putting in this ignition interlock. And now you've suggested, you know, kind of Freakonomics number of 90% to 95% will. I doubt statistically that number would hold up, that it's probably a much more modest figure, and that the two variables that we've talked about today are A, substituting a different substance for alcohol, and B, substituting a different vehicle that has a different, you know, without an ignition interlock, and C, the other thing that was mentioned that I heard today was substituting a different driver who's, you know, a sober driver who will blow in the, not, you know, and not unlike, you know, I remember the bill sponsor, when we first got here a couple of years ago, he talked about being approached by a 15-year-old in a Department of Public Safety sting to go inside of a liquor store and buy him alcohol. I remember him talking about that on the House floor. So it's not beyond, you know, conception that you're not, conception is probably the wrong word, but you certainly could have somebody that would say, hey, kid, come over here. I'll pay you $10 to blow in my car, you know. I hope I have a sober workforce, you know, at my place. I could see somebody who's drunk, who has an ignition interlock, grabbing one of my busboys, saying, hey, for $20, meet me around back, come blow in my come blow in my car, and then they can drive their car home safely. I mean, you know, so I'm interested in trying to pass this bill, but to have it come out of judiciary tighter in those three ways. Who's blowing into it? What vehicles are they driving? And what do we do about substituting other substances and trying to address that specific population, which is what you and I were whispering back and forth about. So I might challenge both of you to come back by, because we, with the calendar, we're not going to meet again until Monday, to see what we can do to tighten this thing up through amendment form with Representative Gruenberg, but also through these other manners, because I think that's what we should be doing, Representative Coghill, is trying to narrow the loopholes and at the same time not take an outfit like the DMV, who are terrific, but we're empowering people. I mean, that would be the other thing that I heard today, is that we're empowering people. I see, you know, Trooper Dial, you are a highly trained individual, but I used to deliver chicken wings out on post, and I would sometimes see 19-year-old MPs that were way beyond their maturity with responsibility, and, you know, would cite you for going 2 miles over the speed limit in a 15-mile-an-hour zone, and you were talking to somebody that didn't have the depth or breadth of judgment to be able to do that. And that's what I heard coming from you, Representative Coghill, is that perhaps we're empowering people inside of the Department of Motor Vehicles with more authority than they can responsibly handle, given their training and their background, I would say, is the other thing that I may have heard here today. So I would appreciate, if you're listening, Duane, for us to be able to come back and address this set of issues, which is kind of the broad scope of things that I think I heard today. And I would invite, with our remaining 10 minutes, any of the other members who may have heard some broad themes that emerged through this committee hearing today to recommend that, because we have the bill sponsor, we have a trooper who's got the uniform on, and we've got the Department of Motor Vehicles, which seem to be the three major players. So does anybody have any remarks?
It's a shame we couldn't come up with some device. I don't have a clue what it would be, where somebody with a revoked license, other than just impounding the car, there can be some device on the car, but I have no clue how that could be put together. There must be something.
Thank you, Representative Flynn. Any other remarks, Vice Chair Dahlstrom?
Thank you. Director Bannock, just out of curiosity, what is the scale of the employees that the one you have currently and the one that you would be requesting that would be handling these issues?
Representative Dahlstrom, through the chair, range 10.
Range 10. Thank you.
Is that what we pair of pages?
Yes.
That's about, yeah. Now, that's for the, may I?
Yes, Representative Gruenberg.
You have a range 10 conducting these hearings?
Representative Gruenberg, through the chair, no, sir. Specifically to issuing the limited license, which today, we're going to talk about two things. Today, you get a limited license upon application, and we're able to verify that you have an employment. There's a form. The form's available on our website. Jump through a bunch of those hoops, and that's the discretion, for lack of a better phrase. Under HB 75, the discretion would be, do we have proof that there is an ignition interlock device installed on a car that they own? So while I do not mean, and I hope that no one there means to impugn any of my employees, that's not to be confused with what the hearing officers do.
Yeah,
Representative Gruenberg.
Mr. Bannock, through the chair, are people now getting their licenses suspended by the courts and then also by the division, or is it either or?
Through the chair, Representative Gruenberg, oftentimes it's both. However, when the court comes through, the majority of the time, the revocation is to run concurrent with the administrative revocation. That is certainly the majority of the cases.
What, if I may continue?
Yes.
What is the reason that people should have to go through it twice? Isn't that a waste? Why shouldn't it be either or? Or just one?
Again, not trying to be a smart aleck, but because that's the way the law reads.
It's our fault.
So well, that's something we might also look at.
Yes, but probably not in this bill. Representative Holmes.
Mr. Chairman, while we're thinking of issues for our next discussion of this bill, I'd like to put out on the table the issue of whether the original provision, the one that was contained in subsection D that's going to be replaced by F, whether that might have a time and a place, whether there should be a backup provision in case you're in an area of the state or where these are not available. Just put that out as a thought.
That's very prudent. Thank you, Representative Holmes. Anything else today? So today's Monday. We've got a because of the calendar, we have a week to work on this, and I believe that we will take this up in deference to the co-chair of finance. We will take this up first thing on Monday and see if we run into any roadblocks on it, and do what we can to shape this into a better piece of legislation as we send it back to finance, so that the chairman can change it back to say whatever he wants. Thank you very much, gentlemen. And with that, at 3:05, we are adjourned for the day.
I forgot about that.